everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of Panditri on a Pint. Today we are three blokes having an above average football conversation. Joining me on the podcast today is Akshat and Po. And it's wonderful news because we are now recording back-to-back episodes week by week, just how it was in the good old days.
Against all odds, bro. We were close today.
Fuck, man. I slept also, dude.
So, the odds that were stacked against us was post sleeping, and I don't know how many countless episodes we've lost because we weren't able to record because Po was sleeping. But today,
oh come on,
Po has slept with his lights on, which forced him to wake up. And I think in some ways the universe was aligned for us, and we are here recording some glorious content for our listeners. But let's kick this episode off. Recently, Dele Alli had spoken to Gary Neville in this absolutely heartbreaking interview where he spoke about how he's not doing so well with his mental health, leaving everything that's happened on the football pitch aside. It's really sad to see, you know, the kind of things that a footballer has to go through, and the things that he's spoken about in that interview are genuinely heartbreaking. Just for listeners who don't know, I'm just going to give a quick brief on the things that he spoke about where, you know, he said that he had to check himself into a rehab facility for 6 weeks in the US because he realized that he is going down a slope that needs to be addressed, which was his mental health, leaving aside everything that's happening on the football pitch and his form. He also spoke about how he was addicted to sleeping pills, which is something that is prescribed by the team to the players a day before they have training or a day before they have a game, because sleep is such a crucial part of a athlete's recovery. But Dele Alli was popping those pills in during the day just to kind of zone out and escape from reality. He also spoke about, and this was I think the one that like got to me the most, where he said that he looked at himself in the mirror at the age of 24 when Mourinho was the manager at Spurs and he wasn't really playing all that much. He looked at himself in the mirror and considered retirement at the age of 24, and between 22 to like 28 is the prime of a football player, especially when you're in the Premier League, you're playing for one of the big six clubs, you are probably one of the most spoken about names in English football, a talent that everyone want to see performing on the pitch, and for you to come out with this kind of a thought, I mean, it's really shocking, right? It's for me, I was always that kind of person, and I admit it now, and I feel really shitty about it, where I would see Dele Alli play and I would just be like, man, this guy's so overrated. He's I don't know what the hype is about. He's not performing on the pitch, but as people outside looking in, you don't really know what's going through someone's mind and the things that are at play apart from those 90 minutes that we see week by week on a football pitch. Akshat, do you want to weigh in here?
Yeah, bro. I mean, well said, because it's not just you. I mean, I can confidently say that almost each and every football fan is like that. When we see a player, especially from our own team, not perform well, we're very quick to criticize. And while criticizing is okay to an extent, we will never truly understand what they are going through and what they have gone through, especially in terms of the mental health. And I think that Dele Alli interview is something which opened my eyes for sure, but it's going to open a lot of eyes of a lot of the viewers around the world. It was quite heartbreaking because what he describes is that he's facing problems because of his childhood trauma, right? And it's those things which he can't escape from. But I think we also need to realize that a majority of footballers are not coming in from upper class families or even upper middle class families. A lot of these footballers are coming from economic backgrounds and social backgrounds which have not been the best. They've not had the best of childhoods. I mean, a completely random example I'm giving, someone like Anthony Dos Santos in Manchester United, he grew up in a very, very rough part of Brazil. Extremely, you know, dangerous environment. He's had his own family issues. Someone like Marcus Rashford as well, who's spoken about, you know, the economic hardships which he had to go through, which his mother had to go through raising their entire family and what all he had to go through. I mean, there are a lot of footballers who have gone through so much in their lives very early on before we even see them break into the first team. And the profession which they're in is one which requires complete and utter dedication. It requires almost an obsession with just training, making yourself better, keeping yourself physically fit. And they never really get the opportunity or the time to look after themselves when it comes to mental health. And that then carries on to the playing days. And the thing is, during your playing days, you have all of that in the background. It never goes away. But what gets added is this insane pressure from fans and from media and from your own expectations, from your manager, from your teammates. It's a huge, huge burden, which is already, you know, just bubbling away at the surface. And it's incredible to me, you know, that Dele Alli was strong enough to come out and accept what he's gone through and reach out for help. And I think, you know, despite whatever he said in the interview, he started off by saying that this is the best state he's ever been in. And that was because he went through therapy and rehab, 6 weeks of therapy and rehab in the US. And I just, you know, I hope that me especially, but like the football community can actually learn to empathize a little bit more of what these players are going through because of the factors I just mentioned, because of what they might have going on earlier in their life. And, you know, maybe just lay it off them. You know, if someone is having a bad time and is clearly, clearly going through something, I don't think, you know, adding any pressure on them is going to help anyone. It's not going to help them play better, and it's really not helping us in any way whatsoever. So, you know, maybe we should learn to just avoid doing that as well.
Yeah. Po, do you want to come in?
Yeah, man. You guys have hit the nail on the head there. I mean, it's hard to speak about these things, especially, even for us, it's hard to speak about these things. Imagine how hard it'll be for these players who are under scrutiny, under the limelight, constantly, 24/7. And just going back, like, just think about it, man. Like, when you think about it in the aspect that these certain people have gone through this from the age of 8, when they've been put into this environment from that young age, and like, they're like, the entire club and the sporting world sort of is watching you and looking at you, asking you to fulfill your potential. The amount of external pressure to it, and like what you talk about, the family circumstances, many people have those at the background as well. And the pressure to do well so that you can get out of those circumstances is also there.
Yeah.
And like the thing is, I heard this somewhere, football is 99% rejections and like how you deal with those rejections. So year on year, when like when you're seeing your mates getting selected over you and you having to get rejected by your club once you reach 14 or 15 and they don't give you a scholarship after that, there are many examples. Like even Rice, even Nketiah, just like taking out names randomly, where they've been let go by their own clubs, from the like of which they were part of from a very young age. But some people learn to cope with it, and then they against all odds, they make it to the professional league at the highest level. But some people do in a way. We never talk about those guys, but that's the sad part about it. And you do not know what they use to cope up with all these pressures. And for example, sleeping pills might be an option. Since the routine of any player is so defined, you need those kind of external elements to help you get adjusted to the routine. You can't blame them for getting into it, but the thing is, the side effects, the negative impacts of it are so bad, and like they're not explored much, they're not talked about much, so it gets even worse. And kudos to Dele Alli to come out and actually have a like open heart to heart talk about it, because now I haven't seen many people do it about mental health issues like on any level. So it's really good that he did come out and speak his heart out, because that actually helps other people who are facing the same situation to, I mean, get some confidence saying, I'm not alone in this. So,
yeah. So
it's really good that he actually did come out and say it. Although, like, now we can sympathize with Dele in understanding, like, what he's been through. So,
also, like, I just want to add over here, this is taking absolutely nothing away from Dele Alli at all. Like, that is not why I'm saying this. But he said in the interview with Gary Neville that he was never ready to talk about this. And rehab kind of told him it's okay to start talking about it to some people. But he still didn't feel like he was ready to talk about it in a public space yet. But he was forced to do so because there was some tabloid which had caught pictures of him entering and exiting rehab.
Yep.
And were contacting his management team saying that, hey, we have this, we're going to run this story, do you have any comment kind of a thing. So, I mean, it's just the kind of stuff these guys have to go through. And sometimes, I mean, I don't want to sound very idealistic, but the world we live in is just so fucked up, man, that, you know, clearly this is a footballer who's been going through some absolute shit, and these tabloids are just trying to make a story out of it, which has forced him to do something he's maybe not 100% comfortable with doing at this time. That's just another thing. I mean, the media is relentless. It's absolutely relentless. Especially the British tabloid journalism is horrible. It's really horrible. And for, I mean, right now, I think for us on the podcast, we have to realize that these are people younger than us, right? And they are having to deal with this kind of attention. It's I don't know how they do it. It takes just an incredible amount of strength and patience.
That's a good segue, because that was a talking point that I'd written down to eventually touch upon, which is the entire media influence on the players and the things that they have to go through. For listeners, we'd addressed this in one of our previous episodes, which is called Football Journalism, where we talk about how apart from the top, not even 1%, like 0.1% of football journalists out there, the other 99.9%, how the kind of stories they write purely just for clickbait to get the views and to get their viewerships up. At some level, it's almost disgraceful, like what happened, as Akshat said, with Dele Alli, where they captured pictures of him coming out of rehab. It's just that, I mean, football is such a watched sport among the world, and it's watched by so many different age categories, right? So everyone have their opinion on what a player should be doing on the pitch, when probably we can't do half of the things or less than half of the things what they're able to do anyways. But we still have to form an opinion on how they're playing. And as Akshat said, it's relentless. The media is always on you. You're scrutinized for every little thing. Almost everything that you say is taken out of context for the players, for the managers. At some point, it's going to boil down. It's going to get to you, right? You have to be extremely thick-skinned. And I don't even know if anyone is that thick-skinned to avoid a million people hurtling abuses at you just because, say, you missed a penalty. I mean, these are the kind of things that athletes sign up for now. They know what they're getting into, but that still doesn't mean they're prepared for when it's actually happening. Another example was Jesse Lingard. I think he came out in 2021 saying that he had a drinking problem because he was not getting picked for the United side, and it took him a lot of support from the family to come out of it. And that's another brave example of a player who's come out and openly spoken about this. One player that I do want to point out, though, I mean, it's not football related, but cricket-wise, Virat Kohli, if listeners know, he's probably one of the most famous cricketers in the modern era, where he came out in an interview and said that he does use social media for promotions to grow his own personal brand. And at the end of the day, he's an athlete who wants to make money, and that's fine. But he doesn't use social media at all to read what people are saying in the comments or what his DMs have or anything like that. He has a manager who posts things for him, and that's it. That's his only relation with social media. And I think it's very difficult to do, because on the flip side, when you are performing well, you are going to want to go onto your page and see what your fans are talking about you. Like, oh my God, that was top bins.
It's human nature.
But just to have
that
kind of, it's human nature, but just trying to instill that kind of discipline and self-control, I think, is very commendable and something that people can take out of that book, you know, because yes, there is a flip side that you're not reading all the praise, but you're not performing every day. You're performing probably, you're giving that level of performance probably once in a month. So the other 3 weeks, you're probably going to get shit on.
Yep. I mean, this is true though, because there was a segment in The Athletic where they touched upon this and said, like, many players performing at the highest level have this habit or addiction, if you would like to call it, where they do tune into their Twitter handles halfway through, just before they even like get down, sit down, have a drink, or have a chat with their teammate about what happened in that half, just to see the reactions of the public and see what they did right, see what they did wrong, where people are criticizing them. So there's this extra.
But Po, there are. That's exactly why there are coaches, there are analysts, and that's why football teams spend millions and millions on their back end to point out these things that fans are already pointing
but
out.
But the thing is,
I mean, you cannot tell me that a.
No, but the thing is, it's a natural tendency, you know, because you are such a big personality.
Yeah, yeah.
You have an influence over so many people. You want to know what the rest of the world is talking about it, because like, it's not just like you're not playing a game without anybody watching, like easily like 100 million or like 50 million or whatever the number is, people are tuned into your that particular 90 minutes. So like, it's human tendency, I would say. I couldn't stop myself. If I was in their place, I would definitely get on board, jump on Twitter, and just to see what the reactions are. I know that toxic ass real relationship, but still.
Yeah. No, but it's only like, no one can stop themselves. Half the people who are abusing these players on Twitter themselves are doing it to get likes on Twitter or to get seen on social media, right? And footballers aren't. I mean, they are human beings at the end of the day. Like, if you've done something awesome and you have, as Po said, millions and millions of people praising you for it, like, how can you stop yourself from going and checking out and giving yourself the dopamine rush? So, yeah, I mean, like, if we're trying to segment it, of course, there's the media side of it, which we've spoken about, and then the social media side of it, right? And the social media side of it is something which is really tricky, because I feel like there are certain players as well, like Dele Alli, like Harry Maguire, Po, tell some Arsenal player, like Ozil maybe. Just these players tend to just stick out as lightning rods for all criticism and tend to be the scapegoats, right? And even if, say, things, I'm not saying that, you know, players will not make mistakes, but even when things are not 100% their fault, they are the ones who get blamed. They are the ones who get attacked on social media. They're fucking people are threatening to set their house on fire and sending death threats to their houses. You know, all these are real things which happen, and these are all things which affect mental health of a player too. So I just feel like, you know, all of this is bad, but then there are some people who have to deal with way more shit than they deserve. I mean, no one deserves to deal with the shit, but you know what I mean, right? Some people just get way, way more proportionately than anyone else. And unfortunately, I feel Dele Alli was that guy, because, you know, humans, like, we love a story where there's this sadistic part inside us where, you know, someone like Dele Alli, who has everything going for him, and when he doesn't do well, we all point at him and be like, dude, how did you not do it? Like, you were the golden child, you had everything in your favor. And then he goes to the Turkish league, and I'm one of those people. I'm like, bro, you, how much money you used to earn? You used to be the golden boy, and now what happened to you? Now you can't even play well in the Turkish league, right? And I think all of us just kind of end up like missing the entire context of what is going on in their life, which got them to that stage. So yeah, I just feel like for some of these players, especially, we just need to learn to chill a little bit. It's okay. We don't have to like them, but that doesn't mean we have to insult them at every single opportunity we get.
Apart from the 90 minutes on the pitch, players also have to go through so much in terms of just being a footballer, right? And this was spoken, I think, about last season. So in 2022, FIFPro did a survey where they found out that one out of every three footballers are facing mental issues of some kind, addressed or unaddressed. It could be anything from depression to OCD to anxiety to whatever. But last season, this was touched upon where the fixture congestion, which was so tight, is really not helping the footballer's mental health in any way, apart from all the physical strains and injuries that we've seen. Just to think about it, like, for example, United, they were playing almost three games every week, correct me if I'm wrong, where, you know, you would have a late fixture, you'd finish, then you'd have to go for your media duties, which would take another few hours post the game. And if you've lost, it's even worse because, come on, like, professional athletes, nobody likes to lose. And then you have to appear for all of these media duties, then go back home, one day rest, training, and then again start playing on a Wednesday. So there's just absolutely no time to sit and reflect to see how, firstly, yourself are doing, probably spending time with family, talking to your friends and whatever. That's just absolutely evaporated, right? And then add to that the number of injuries that come up through the season. Some of them have been absolutely gruesome injuries that could have been career threatening. We've seen players who've been out for almost an entire year, 6 months. Fofana is an example. Antony is an example. Van de Beek is an example. These guys have just had it relentless in terms of the fixtures. The physical injuries make it so much worse for a football player, because losing 1 year of your time of an anyways limited career is not going to help you. I mean, it's a lot of other factors. Now we've spoken about the fixture congestions. What about if you're not getting picked itself? The manager is not picking you. You are on the bench, or you're running down your contract. You have 1 year left and you're like, oh shit, I'm 31. Who's going to offer me?
Yeah.
Who's going to offer me a contract to play in the league? It's so many other factors apart from what is going on in those 90 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you made an excellent point. I was thinking about that contract situation as well myself. I mean, can you imagine knowing that, okay, in about 7 months, my contract is expiring? Like, just in your day-to-day job, knowing that you are going to be unemployed 7 months from now, June 30th, that exact, you know, moment you are going to be unemployed, and no one is giving you an offer, right? And you want, say, to prove yourself to some other teams, but your form is not good. And now you might, you know, you're not getting the opportunity to prove yourself. And then you start thinking about things like, I might have to move. I might have to go to a different country. I might have to take my kids out from the school. I might have to, you know, move my entire family with me. Or maybe I go alone. I have no support staff. I'll have to go to a place where I don't speak the language. I mean, these are legit things that footballers think of. And maybe like only the top 0.5% of footballers have that kind of job security, where they know that, you know, no matter what, they are going to be taken care of. Those are the elite of the elite. But rest of the footballing pyramid, this is such a huge concern for them as well. And again, you know, coming back to injuries, I mean, there are people who have spoken about this. Can you imagine, you know, like, knowing how to do one thing in your entire life and then not being able to do it because of a bad injury, and then the amount of effort, the mental strain and the physical strain which you go through to make your body ready to come back and return from the injury. And you have two or three games. If after two or three games you don't perform well, again, everyone's on your back saying that, oh, this guy's lost the out of pace. Oh, this guy's not the same as he was before. And we have to sell this guy and get someone younger. All that kind of stuff you start hearing. And there are people who do that, go through, you know, months of rehab when it comes to injuries, and then they get injured again. Like someone like Marco Reus, for example. I mean, your heart goes out to these people. It's again an extremely, extremely difficult situation to deal with mentally. And
he missed all three World Cups, right, that he could have played, Marco Reus?
One of them was legit in the prime of his life. That was just after or just before the season where Dortmund won the Bundesliga. The last time they won it.
That was the World Cup that Germany won.
Exactly.
That was the World Cup they won.
Yeah. He wasn't in the squad when...
Oh, he wasn't in the squad for... Oh, even the Bundesliga, he wasn't in the squad.
No.
Man.
He wasn't in the squad. He hasn't won the Bundesliga with Dortmund.
See, like, these are the things, dude. It just...
And he's missed out on the 2014 World Cup.
I don't know how they do it, man. I just don't know how they do it. And it's great that, you know, Dele Alli came out and he started this topic. And I hope, you know, people listening to this also start thinking about these things, because these are things that I never thought of, you know, like, yeah, I mean, it's easy to say that, yeah, of course they go through pressure and all that, but actually sitting here and thinking and talking about what they must go through is, yeah, it's good. You kind of feel more empathy towards them.
Do you think this interview has sort of sparked a conversation about how the media should change, or do you think that we are too far down a rabbit hole where the media is going to stay exactly the way it is and players will just have to adapt?
It's not going to change. It's not going to affect it. The media is going to circle around it. They're going to act like goody people, like who are the ones who are trying to get everything out into the limelight rather than like focusing on the problem which they are.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're not going to go out of the way to change their methods and the way they behave. So there's not going to be any impact, bro.
Yeah. Oh, you had a story about something that happened in the US. Do you want to quickly touch upon that?
Yeah, so this was like a year ago, and it wasn't brought out and much into the limelight. Recently, it has been in the media since there's a World Cup happening from today, actually. So
the Women's World Cup.
This person called Katie Meyer. I mean, so she was in Stanford University, and you know the whole US culture where like university and college sports, athleticism is like a gateway into professional life, right?
Yeah.
So what happened is like she's in her senior final year, and she's the captain of the team, and she's the goalkeeper as well. One day she's found dead in her room. And her parents sue Stanford University because they find out that there's a series of mails going on accusing her of behavioral issues, and she's not, the disciplinary committee is sending her mails which are saying that she might get kicked out of school because she apparently spilled a cup of coffee on a football player, American football player, like from the same school, because apparently he is sexually assaulted a teammate of hers. So she's trying to defend her teammate, but she's the bad one in this whole scenario, and she can't find a way out, and the only thing she's like she can see is having to take her own life. And this has sparked a huge mental health awareness program all across universities in US, and there are still like talks being held about a program called KT's Safe, where like universities try to openly reach out to student athletes for mental health awareness and programs. And even now in the World Cup right now, she had a couple of teammates who are playing in the US women's national team right now. So those people have started a campaign right now during the World Cup where they're trying to reach out, make campaigns related to mental health awareness, and reach out to other sports athletes who are facing the same dilemma. Even I think Fox Sports has decided to donate 1% of their total earnings throughout this World Cup campaign for mental health. So that is a positive sign, even though that might seem like a small number. So yeah, I mean, it can lead to devastating effects, like taking one's life if it is not being attended to. And this should be like something that is taught right from school into your clubs. Many clubs, apparently women's clubs in the US, do not have a focus on mental health, and they're trying to get that into part of that curriculum and training programs and like rehabilitation programs as well. So sort of a downer, but yeah.
This is surprising actually, because I would say that the US universities are the forefront in mental health awareness, where you would find these counselors, not one, but like multiple counselors all across the universities. And then cut to India, where I think the topic itself is not, like, people are not even aware that someone can have mental health problems, you know. We are that far behind. But it's good to see that, you know, the Delhi Alley incident has sparked a conversation among us where we're sort of sitting and reflecting on these topics, which I don't think we even thought of before, like Akshat said.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, you know, campaign and great thing which they're doing over there in the US. Because I think football within itself has to form frameworks and guidelines and provide support to itself. Because I think there's one thing which really stood out to me, which Dele Alli said in the interview as well, which is that mentally what football does to you, no one can, like literally no one can understand it. You will only understand it if you are in it or if you are going through it. And I mean, of course, there's the PFA, right? The Professional Football Association. And after this interview, I went over there and tried to see, you know, like, what are they doing? Like, what are the support systems which they have in place? And I think they also had, they released an official statement after this this interview, and where they basically informed all the players that these are the resources you have available, that, you know, we have a counseling network of about 200 plus trained professionals who you can reach out to at any time. You can reach out to anonymously if you want. We have residential rehab facilities if you require it, both private and government funded. Because that's important too, right? We have to remember that football is not just the English Premier League in England. It's 7-8 tiers down as well. And not everyone is going to be able to afford, you know, the greatest healthcare out there. There is, like, no one can, you know, fly out to US, for example, and go to a rehab facility there. There are people who just can't afford that. So I think when it comes to these sort of issues, it's very important that the sport looks after itself. And I hope that the occurrences of what we've seen with KT, for example, or Dele Alli, or the hundreds and thousands of other, you know, people who are going through mental issues in football, it reduces, you know, and more is done to address this issue, like, head on, you know, rather than trying to react to it later when the damage is already kind of done to a player's career.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's fair to say that it has been done to Dele Alli's career, because 23, 24, he was probably the most talked about footballer in England, cut to 28, and he's gone so far back.
Yeah, and I mean, career is one thing, but mental health is something which needs to be tackled for, you know, just your life in general, right? Because football is one thing, and footballers will move on to do other things in their life. Most of them have to, because you're not earning for very long as a footballer. And I'd like to think that there are more important things for than football for these footballers as well. And I hope they themselves realize, and we kind of prioritize for them to take care of themselves more, rather than, you know, trying to just, as Dele Alli did, you know, just keep everything inside, not talk about it, not show it up as a sign of weakness, you know, thinking that it's going to affect his selection or how he's perceived by the fans, by the community, and just, you know, go out there and get help when you require it. Because what's more important than your life and your mental state of being?
Yeah, well said. Any closing remarks, guys, on the topic that we've just discussed?
Nothing much to add, but just I just like to go back to I just mentioned the World Cup, right? So just imagine this, huh? US have won, US women's team have won the last three World Cups, I think.
Really?
And they're not last two or three. I'm not exactly sure, but I think it's three. So, and there are a whole new crop of players right now who are like just 20, 22. Imagine the pressure on them right now, like to have to emulate that. It's sort of like how before the dream team came up in basketball and they went and lost the World Cup, but then the US team, and they had to completely reform and then form the dream team. But then this isn't football, and the amount of pressure there is in women's football, because they're the forefront of it. Like, and no matter what you say, like, they're the front runners in terms of getting equal pay, getting the best audience to watch their product. And now they're like hordes of unknown names in the team, and like the pressure on those kids to actually perform and try to live up to the past expectations and win another World Cup. I hope it doesn't get too much for those girls. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's fans' expectations, man. Like, you're not going to waver. Yeah, you're not going to waver on that. I think what we can do at the end of the day is just be more empathetic if things don't work out, but still hope and expect for the best from your idols.
I mean, before we move on, but Amar, that's just idealistic. If you remember in cricket, like just to bring up past experiences, which I remember clearly, back in 2007 when we went out and lost the World Cup then, and there were like fires all around here in Bangalore, man. Dude. Like Kumble, Dravid, they were like...
But listen, I have to say this had nothing to do with mental health than it had with... players going to enjoy a night out in Barbados before the game and coming hungover on the pitch. So there are two very different conversations.
Amar will not let this slide, Po.
Yeah. It's that team was really good, and they went with I don't know what kind of mindset, but there were literally videos of like Yuvraj Singh absolutely hammered, like hungover on, and he's fielding the next day in a World Cup match. So, yeah, I don't think you can write that off as a mental health issue for the players or something. They absolutely deserved getting flogged on the streets of Bangalore.
Damn, son, we had such a good run, and we ended on this.
We were doing so well, dude. We were doing so fucking well.
But just before we close, we have a special treat for our listeners, because we are back with story time with Akshat. Akshat, please do the honors. I am excited for this one.
Yes. Okay. I have a new story, meaning like it's a story which happened pretty... like recently. I'm not going back to the 19...
Akshat has just pulled out... One second, Akshat has just pulled out something like a book from his table. Is that your story time with Akshat notes that you're going to publish one day?
You can publish it, man. Like, after a while, like, save it up. Save all your story times up and publish it.
This is not a bad idea, boys. No, but Amar, this is a notebook with barely legible handwriting. Because I had to write down some stuff for the story. Because the details are important.
Okay.
So yeah, we are going to France for this story. Particularly League 2 or League... whatever it's called in French. I don't know. So France football is changing, okay? From next season, from 23-24 season. So, from a 20-team model is going to an 18-team model, right? Which is what Germany has right now. Which is supposed to help with fixture congestion, which is a good thing. But that's not the point. The point is that from League 2 to League 1 now, there are not going to be three teams which qualify this season. There are only going to be two teams which qualify, the first two teams. So, there are no playoffs and nothing like that. And also, there are going to be four teams which get relegated, okay? I mean, this happened. Like,
is that only for this season?
Yeah, because...
Yeah, to get rid of the two extra teams, yeah.
Yeah. So, the team which we're going to focus on is Bordeaux. Now, we all know Bordeaux, I think, from... You know, they were pretty good in the mid-2000s. But recently, they've been in a lot of trouble. So, they actually got relegated last year. They got relegated down to the third tier of French football because of financial issues, but they appealed that, and they had basically 40 million of debt to alleviate, and they were able to sell one of their players to Southampton. I think his name is Mara or something, Sekou Mara, I don't remember, for like some 15 million or something. And then they were like, see, we can raise capital, and they're like, fine, we'll let you play in the second division. Okay, so now we're going to fast forward 36 match days. Bordeaux are in second place. Okay, the top two teams get promotion. Metz are in third place. Bordeaux lose and Metz win. Now, we are going into the final day where Metz are second in the table with 69 points. Bordeaux are third in the table with 69 points. Okay, when we go further down on the table, again, you have to remember that there are four teams being relegated, okay? there are three teams you need to remember. A team which is on 15th place called RSC, okay? Then Rodez in 16th and Stade on 17th, okay? I'll just say this because it's very important, okay? Annecy on 15th.
You've absolutely butchered the French names, bro.
All of them.
Butchered it.
Yeah. Then there's Rodez in 16th and Stade in 17th, okay? Annecy and Rodez are above the relegation zone and Stade are below, are all just on the precipice. They're 17th, so they will get relegated if they stay there, okay? Now, match day 38, the final day. Mets have to play Bastia, who are 4th. And Bordeaux play Rodez, who are 16th. Now, for Rodez, they have to stay in the league. And for Bordeaux, if they win the match, they're probably going to stay. They're probably going to get promoted. In the 22nd minute of that match, Rodez, who are playing away, score a goal. They go and they start celebrating that goal in front of Bordeaux fans.
Nice.
One of the fans is drunk. He's had enough of this, okay? He's just realized his team might not get promoted. What he does is he comes down from the stands onto the pitch and pushes a player. Pushes a Rodez player. That Rodez player was being held by another one of his teammates and he kind of trips on him and he falls. And when he falls, he gets a whiplash on his neck. And he is concussed.
Oh shit.
He has severe pain and he's concussed. He's out for some time, in fact. Now, obviously, the ref pauses play and they go off the pitch and they make sure everything is done properly, right? In the meantime, because on the final day, all the matches are going on together, Stade, who were one place behind Rodez, they score 2 second half goals and win the game. Mets as well, who were in second place, they also win their game and they finish on top, like on top of Bordeaux. Now, according to whatever laws are in place, when an incident like this happens, you're supposed to stop the game. And that's what the referee did. He stopped the game. So now we are in a situation where Bordeaux have played one game less and are in third place, and Rodez are in 17th place in the relegation zone, and they were leading. Like, that's the most important thing. They were leading and they're in the relegation zone, and they don't know if they've been saved from relegation or not. And both teams go to the French Association, they complain, and obviously Bordeaux is like, we should continue the game, we should play the last 70 minutes of the game because that's the most fair thing for both sides. And the Rodez chairman is obviously like, I've never heard of, you know, someone playing the final game after the final day is over.
Yeah.
Both of them were arguing. And at the end of the day, what the French, you know, Football Association decided to do is they decided to call it a loss for Bordeaux and a win for Rodez. And
what?
Yeah, because Rodez were leading 1-0 at that time. And they decided to just call the result at that point. So that gave Rodez 3 points and that gave Bordeaux 0 points. So because of this, because of one fan, his home club, Bordeaux, did not get promoted. And because of this one fan, Rodez got an automatic 3 points and they got safe from relegation. But
what a legend.
There's one more thing, okay? Because Stade and Rodez both won their games, there was one team I said who was ahead of them, Annecy, right? Those guys did not win their game. So they fell from 15th to 17th and they got relegated. And this fan, his second favorite team was Annecy because he was from that city.
Holy!
So with one push, he got his favorite team like not promoted and he got his hometown team relegated with one push.
Bro, I don't know what I would have done, man.
That guy, I think he's lucky actually, that fan, because he got arrested and he's in jail.
Someone should check up on his mental health.
I swear, bro. I mean, his life ends the moment he gets released from jail. So, yeah. When there are two sets of ultras after you, you can't do anything.
Bro, I'd go surrender myself to jail, like, if I did that. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be seen out in public. There's no way.
I'd commit a more serious crime so that they lock me up for longer.
Wow. When you gave me, when you told me that the result ended 1-0, it gave me such ultimate team vibes. When you're leading 1-0 and you lose connection to your opponent, but you don't get the result. It's the most annoying thing.
But I don't think this is fair, man. I don't think this is fair. Just play the game out.
Akshat, I don't know where you get this from, but like, this is awesome stuff.
This one was from a YouTube video, bro. But actually, bro, like, imagine like that club, the chairman is trying to navigate this club through a very tricky financial crisis. And what can that poor guy do, bro? Like, imagine the director of football. What will he do when this happens?
Imagine the players who are like all revved up to fight for their team and secure promotion. And there's one random dude who just stops the game.
Yeah.
Oh well. Condolences to the Bordeaux fans. It's damn funny, but
apart from that one,
that one guy. Yeah. On that note, we're gonna wrap this episode up. Thank you, listeners, for getting to the end of the podcast. Do share, like, subscribe, do all those good things. Thank you, Akshat and Po. It's been a very, very fun episode to record, and we shall catch you next week. Bye-bye.